Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We begin with reports in the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal that the FCC's new chairman, Tom Wheeler, is proposing new rules that would give the phone and cable monopolies and oligopolies who control our access to the Internet the ability to negotiate payola agreements with content providers to fast-track their content while degrading access for ordinary users, thus eviscerating the principle of net neutrality that has kept the Internet open to all on a level playing field. John Bergemeier, a senior staff attorney at Public Knowledge, a public interest digital rights group based in Washington, D.C., joins us to discuss whether the public is about to lose the most important new medium in human history. Then we'll examine the significance of Turkey's Prime Minister Erdogan's offer of condolences to Armenians over the World War I killings on the eve of the 99th anniversary of what the Armenians and many others consider an act of genocide. David Phillips, the chair of the Turkey-Armenia Reconciliation Commission and author of Diplomatic History, the Turkey-Armenia Protocols, joins us to discuss his efforts to bring about reconciliation over what happened in 1915 that since then has been denied by the Turks and festers as a source of anger amongst the Armenian diaspora and in Armenia, where its border with Turkey remains closed. Then finally, with Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu suspending U.S.-sponsored peace talks with the Palestinians over President Abbas's unity pact with Hamas, we will speak with Leila Hilal, who served as a legal advisor to the Palestinian Negotiation Department and acted as an external advisor to the Palestinian negotiating team at the Annapolis peace talks of 2008. We'll discuss what this means for the peace talks that were going nowhere and how the secular Fatah group in the West Bank can form a working relationship with its Islamist rivals, Hamas, in Gaza, who refuse to recognize Israel and who Israel in turn considers a terrorist group. And joining us now is John Bergemeier, who is a senior staff attorney at Public Knowledge, a public interest digital rights group based in Washington, D.C. Welcome to Background Briefing, John Bergemeier.
Thank you for having me.
And there's been something of a tectonic explosion here today with both the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal reporting that the FCC plans to effectively do away with net neutrality, meaning that the Internet will be changed forever, where there won't be neutrality for all sites, people having equal access to everything on the Internet, but rather the big monopolies that control the pipes into people's homes, Comcast, Time Warner, who are trying to merge Verizon and AT&T, essentially will be able to charge Google, Netflix, and all of these other big content providers a special fee in order for them to fast-track their content at the expense of everybody else's content. So that's what's at stake, and have we lost the battle?
I don't think we've lost the battle yet, because this is just an idea that one member of a five-member FCC commission has put forward. He still needs to get at least two more votes. The reactions are still coming in. Even some of the House Democrats have expressed skepticism about the approach that the chairman has put forward to protect net neutrality is what it's supposed to do, but in reality would undermine it. So I think we'll have some work to do to basically convince the chairman and his staff that the current proposal really isn't good enough. And just to sort of remind you of what it is, the FCC has proposed that they'll allow commercially reasonable prioritization arrangements between ISPs and Internet content and services companies. But those are exactly the kinds of arrangements that we're afraid of. The commercially reasonable arrangement is for no money to change hands, because there's nothing to be prioritized about. You know, ISPs would like to essentially build up artificial barriers on the last mile and then charge Internet companies if they want to bypass them. And that's definitely a problem, because it's raising the costs and it's reducing consumer choice, and it's really threatening the open nature of the Internet as we've known it.
Well, Tom Wheeler, the new head of the FCC, who these proposals are presumably his, He has gone public today saying that they're dead wrong, these news reports in the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, that he's not about to do a U-turn. So what do you make of that?
Well, I think he just sees what he wants to do as not abandoning net neutrality. So maybe he just has a different vision of what net neutrality consists of than the rest of us do. I mean, sure, there's some things in his proposal which are good. There's a transparency requirement where ISPs have to disclose exactly what their practices are. Something like that already exists. And there'd be a requirement that ISPs aren't allowed to just outright block websites. And look, I think it's good. I think that the principle that ISPs can't block websites needs to be part of the law. It needs to be written down somewhere. That said, that's really not the concern that that we have. I think it's unlikely that Comcast or Verizon is going to start blocking access to a political party's website or something like that. The trouble that we've run into with companies like this is a lot more subtle. For example, Comcast currently exempts its own broadband video service from data caps, but not that of its competitors. So that would mean, you know, that's creating an incentive to watch Comcast service and not Netflix or Hulu. So that's a problem that we see. Or you see when AT&T, when Apple introduced FaceTime for iPhones, it didn't work on AT&T. And there was some complicated technical reason that they tried to give us as to why that was the case. And ultimately, they did allow FaceTime, the application FaceTime, which is a video chat app, to work on iPhones on AT&T. So, but those are the problems we have. It's these subtle anti-competitive pressures on apps and services that compete with the ISP's own business plans that we're concerned about. That's the much more likely scenario. It's death by a thousand cuts. It's not an ISP deciding, you know, to block people's access to particular websites. And the problem with the chairman's proposal is that those kinds of arrangements where a particular company comes to some commercial agreement with an ISP are exactly the kinds of agreements that the proposal would expressly allow. The term commercially reasonable, I mean, what does that even mean? It just really means whatever deal that two companies can come to terms on, as long as it's not, you know, nakedly anti-competitive, should be fine. So that's the objection we have with the proposal as it stands right now.
Sure, commercially reasonable is a meaningless term because all deals, by definition, are commercially reasonable because they both commercial sides agree on it. The real question is it publicly reasonable or is it reasonable in the public interest? Now, in 2007, John Bergmeier, President Obama was asked at a public forum, would you make it a priority in your first year of office to reinstate net neutrality as the law of the land? And would you pledge to only appoint FCC commissioners that support open internet principles like net neutrality? And Obama replied, the answer is yes, I am a strong supporter of net neutrality. What you've been seeing is some lobbying that says that the servers and the various portals through which you're getting information over the internet should be able to be gatekeepers and to charge different rates to different websites. And that, I think, destroys one of the best things about the internet, which is that there is this incredible equality there. Now, this is the president. He was at the time a candidate. However, he did appoint Tom Wheeler. So what's going on here in relationship to President Obama and his appointee, Tom Wheeler?
I think that President Obama's statement that you just quoted to me is actually correct. That is a much stronger vision of what net neutrality consists of. And you'll notice in his statement there's even this notion that you don't want to charge different internet services, different websites, different rates, because that would be the essence of the discriminatory conduct that we're trying to prohibit. So I hope what we don't have here is like a redefinition by the FCC of what net neutrality means. So they just decide they're going to change what net neutrality means, and then lo and behold, they adopt rules that protect net neutrality. Well, I mean, maybe we need a new word then, because the principle still stands that I want to make sure that the internet is an open platform and it's not payola-based and it's not pay-for-play, and that any internet service has an equal opportunity to reach users as any other, and it's not just the rules favor the companies with the most money and the ability to pay off the major ISPs.
Again, I'm speaking with John Bergmeier, who's a senior staff attorney at Public Knowledge, a public interest digital rights group based in Washington, D.C. And we're talking about news reports both in the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal that the new chairman of the FCC, Tom Wheeler, who was a former lobbyist for the big cable and telecom companies, wants to change the very nature of the internet in terms of eviscerating the net neutrality rule. He has denied that, but we're trying to figure out who to believe here, frankly. When are we going to get some clarity from Tom Wheeler then? I thought that his proposals were going to the full FCC today.
Well, the proposals are, but that doesn't mean that the full FCC is actually voting on them. There's a meeting next month where the FCC, all five members, basically appear and they discuss and vote on particular items. So what's happening right now, as I understand it, is that this proposal is being circulated among the other members. Now, like I said, he needs to get at least two more votes. And to me, the key question is, first, what is going to be the reaction of the other two Democratic members of the FCC? And is he able to win their support? Because that's always important. You want to make sure that your own party is on your side. And second, while Republicans have traditionally been hostile to the concept of net neutrality, I mean, this is such, to me, a weakened version of net neutrality that they may very well end up supporting it. And I'd like to see how that dynamic plays out as well.
Yeah, but that doesn't sound like three votes against it. If Wheeler's proposed this watering down of net neutrality, even though he says it isn't a U-turn, and if the two Democratic commissioners vote against his new proposal, he's got the other two Republican votes, so that's three to two in favor of Wheeler's proposal.
No, that's true. And there have been FCC commissioners, like Republican Commissioner Chairman Martin, who have been more than willing to rely on the votes of the opposite party to get something through. As a political matter, I think you definitely want to make sure that you have the support of the party that appointed you.
Well, that means President Obama.
Yeah, and, going back to Obama's statement, I'm not sure that Chairman Wheeler's proposal really lives up to the spirit of what President and previously candidate Obama has said that he believes in, which is an equal internet that's open to everyone on the same terms.
Well, to my mind, John Bergemeier, the subtext here is, and I don't think you can divorce it from this big merger that's underway between Time Warner Cable and Comcast, which the Senate had hearings on recently. You know, these big monopolies essentially rely on the government to give them a license to charge whatever they want and provide whatever the service, they consider minimal, so Wall Street can extract the profits that they expect. And we've seen this go on, for a long time now, and we know that the American consumer is getting shafted, and we have about the worst broadband in the world, even though the internet was invented here in the United States, that we're falling behind Japan and South Korea and countries like France, where you have 10 times the speed at a quarter of the price. England is another example. The rest of the world is leaving us behind. This is because of these monopolies who, rather than give you decent service, just use their lobbying power to create a monopoly. They already have monopolies at any rate. Time Warner and Comcast, in the areas where they allegedly serve the consumer, the consumer has no choice. You got the one pipe and that's it. Tough luck if you don't like your service. So this, to me, is a way for this broken model of capitalism to survive, because these guys that run these lousy companies that gouge you and increase your bills while your service gets worse, now they've got a gravy train from the Netflixes and the Amazons and the Googles of the world, because they'll be able to charge these guys a lot more money to fast-track their content to the consumer. So this is going to be a whole new revenue stream for these lousy companies.
No, I think that's absolutely true. And I want to emphasize a point that you made, which is the concept of a big monopoly as opposed to, a little monopoly. So just imagine that it was like it was closer to like we had in the 80s, where you had a different cable company in each town, and they were relatively small for the most part, and until a lot of corporate tycoons got a hold of them and started buying them up and assembling these giant companies like Comcast. Well, you know, from a consumer perspective, having a small monopoly versus a large monopoly, it's still a monopoly and it's not so great. Your prices might be high, the service might not be very good. That said, there is a difference from the other side, from the content supplier side. So whether you're creating, whether you're a programmer or a writer or you're an internet service, if you just have to deal with just like the one small monopoly that covers a small town, well, that guy's not going to have a lot of leverage over you. And if the local cable company in Peoria wants to say that, you know, Netflix needs to pay them off to reach their customers, you know, Netflix can tell them to go take a hike. It's a very different story when you have these gigantic cable companies that control access to millions upon millions of viewers, because now all of a sudden the negotiating dynamic is flipped and these large companies have the ability to put pressure on content companies and internet companies to get paid off or to get other terms in a way that a smaller company wouldn't, because essentially they're able to sell access to their customers. And that's a big problem, and that is exactly the problem that the merger between Comcast and Time Warner Cable would exacerbate. You know, so we don't just need net neutrality rules to ensure that companies who have monopolies of any kind don't abuse their position, but we also want to make sure we have a market structure that reduces the anti-competitive incentives and the ability of these companies to exploit their whatever anti-competitive motive they might have.
But John Bergemeier, Verizon sued the FCC and won before the Second Circuit Court of Appeals, the D.C. Court of Appeals. They did that because they want to make more money, and this is a way that they can do it. And by the way, Verizon's the same company that sues various municipalities along with Comcast and AT&T and Time Warner Cable to prevent those small cable companies that you talked about, the small municipal cable companies, from providing better broadband service, as is the case with Chattanooga, Tennessee, which has the best broadband in the country. So that's what's going on here. So I, to my mind, this is the power of monopolies to over government to get their way, to basically, you know, write their own checks, because, you know, Netflix and company are going to have to pay a lot of money to Time Warner and Comcast and these other companies to get their product out, and they'll be willing, I think, to pay the money to have the faster service. So, again, this is a huge windfall for these monopolies.
No, that's absolutely right. A big problem with companies of any kind when you're dealing with where they're supposed to be regulated, in this case by the FCC, when those companies are just so large and well-funded and they just have these amazing law firms and these economists and engineers on call, you're really able to basically bury the FCC in paperwork. I mean, it can barely keep up because it's just outmatched, it seems sometimes. So I think that the influence of large companies over the government process is pretty bad in a lot of ways, but, you know, a lot of people focus on things like campaign finance, or they focus on Congress or something like that. But the problem is very real when it comes to the administrative agencies that are supposed to promote consumer welfare or public safety, is that it's very difficult to match the resources that these very large companies are able to bring to bear.
So at what point then do the citizens and the netizens get up in arms and descend on Washington with pitchforks?
Well, I think what we need is for everyone to contact their member of Congress and basically tell their member to tell the FCC that they have to reclassify broadband access service as telecommunications. I mean, it seems it's really counterintuitive, but the way that the FCC looks at broadband today is it treats it as something called an information service. So it's in the same regulatory category as essentially a website. And that doesn't make a lot of sense. There's a clear difference between, you know, me putting up a website for people to view and providing a physical communications infrastructure and digging up the streets and so on. So if the FCC basically gets its act together and classifies broadband as a telecommunications service, that gives it a lot of the tools that it needs to actually promote real net neutrality instead of a phony net neutrality that still allows discriminatory conduct to go forward. But the FCC is well aware of this legal argument, but it's just afraid of the politics because it's afraid of what AT&T and Comcast will do and what, you know, the letters that those large companies are going to be able to get members of Congress to write to the FCC saying, how dare you consider regulating the companies that you're charged by Congress to regulate. So what we need is a counterforce, and the best way for there to be a counterforce is for people to basically make their voice heard. Because money talks in Washington, D.C., but votes talk too. And when people, when members of Congress and their staff start hearing from voters en masse, you know, that actually does have a real impact, and we've seen it again and again. So that would be my recommendation.
Well, John Bergamer, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with John Bergamer, who is a senior staff attorney at Public Knowledge, a public interest digital rights group based in Washington, D.C. And we're going to take a brief station break and be back looking into the significance of Turkey's prime minister's offer of condolences on the eve of the 99th anniversary of the Armenian genocide.